why I've come from far away, to take away the blues, and I've come to say, I wanna be more than just somebody. I wanna be more than just a friend. I wanna be more than someone special. 'Cause special friends sometimes they won't understand. Now we can laugh and share the pain, all of the tears and joy is gained. When all of us fail to show, I hope you believe and always. Be more than just somebody.
Hello?
Hello?
Yes. This is Mary Lou Leonza Sullivan.
Hi, this is Mandolin with Blog Talk Radio.
I'm one of the hosts tonight, or the guests. And Daphne told me to call at 6:10.
Hello, can you hear me, Madeline? Hi, Mary Lou, can you hear me? Hello, can you hear me?
I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Yes, who's this? Mary Lou, can you hear me now, right?
I can hear you from the beginning.
Okay, I couldn't hear you. We are having the same problems like we were having last night. So now I'm calling in for from a telephone, and I'm waiting to make sure that the show is being taped. So I have the tech lady on the chat. You were talking to her before. So let me just connect with her to make sure we are ready to go. And I do apologize for any issues.
Oh, no. There's no reason to apologize. The only thing I requested is that if for some reason it's not going to go, to please let me know.
Okay, great. So we will be in touch. Just hold on, please.
Thank you.
Okay, she's saying I am on. Okay, are you I'm waiting on her, and then...
No problem. Listen, as long as I hear a human voice, I'm fine.
Okay, yes, I'm going to start from the beginning because I want to ask her to edit the beginning for me after we're finished.
Okay, as long as somebody comes to me and says, we're working or we're not working. In the meantime, I can do a million things.
Okay, hold on, please.
Thank you.
Mary Lou?
I'm here.
Okay, I'm going to start the show, and then I'll bring you on. So just hang in there in the virtual green room. Thank you. Thank you, Mandy. Have a great day.
Thank you, too.
Some friends you gain, some you lose. In the back of your mind, you're looking for love, but found the blues. That's why I come from far away, to take away the blues. And I've come to say, I want to be more than just.
Well, good evening, good evening, good evening, and welcome to the new show. It's a beautiful day here in Connecticut. Today, we experience the type of weather that is normally a summer day, but it was gorgeous. And I do pray that wherever you are in the world, that your day was as gorgeous as the day that I experienced here in Connecticut. This is the Queen of the Empowered Soul on a Saturday evening. So you see how much I care about you, my listeners, that I decide I want to do something great and spend my Saturday evening with you. And as a matter of fact, those of you who know me well, you know that I'm a risk taker. And I tell you, just yesterday, which was on Friday, Friday the 30th of April 2010, I called a parent up out of one of the school system districts here, which is Newtown. I called the parent up for something entirely different from the radio show or my personal speaking business and everything. And you all know how much I talk. And I met this lady, and I called her up just to schedule an appointment for another program that I needed her family to participate in. And we got into a stimulating, energetic, and extremely informative and educational conversation. And I began asking questions, as any good coaches do. And I said, my God, in my spirit, we felt so connected. And I said to her, well, I think we need to enter into conversation this evening on the radio show, which was supposed to be last night on Friday. And because of technical difficulties, we did not get into conversation. And I was blessed to meet this wonderful lady today. As a matter of fact, I spent the greater part of today at her home with she, her husband, and her son, and what an amazing family they are. And this woman, I'm sure, by the end of our conversation tonight, you are just going to fall in love with her. She is just an amazing woman. And I tell you, grab your pens, grab your pads, or any writing utensils you have, or your laptop, whatever you want, because you're going to be learning so much from this amazing woman. So I want to go ahead without any further delay, because we were posed with a bigger challenge earlier on in this show, and we are off to a late start. So I am going to just give you the telephone number. The telephone number is 646-915-8166. And you can call in and join the conversation anytime your heart desires. And if you have any similar experience that you would like to share, you can just call in and share that. So again, the number to call is 646-915-8166. And momentarily, I am going to try my best in getting the chat room up and running. Well, my distinguished guest for this evening is none other than Mary Lou Leonzando. I think I pronounced that wrong.
Leonza
Sullivan. And she is a lover of the written word, specifically the works of major literary artists such as Henry James Joyce, Jane Austen, Proust. They take us down a road we would never have thought of traveled by ourselves. Think of them as the road guides into an unknown universe. And I tell you something, those of you who have known me for a long time and those of you who have been listening to this show when we started and those of you who listened to me when I did traditional radio, you know the one thing I always request of you is to invest in yourself by reading. And when you listen to Mary Lou tonight, you are going to see why I fell in love with her right from the beginning. Mary Lou, thank you agreeing to come on and welcome to the A New Day Show.
I thank you.
It is such I am mesmerized by you. I am mesmerized by you. Because yesterday when we began speaking, you said to me, last night I was at Yale University to listen to a presentation from a literary expert. And when I heard that, Mary Lou, the next question, as you can remember, I asked you, what work you do? Because it speaks volume about you. You are not a teacher. You are not a professor. You are not a lecturer. You are not an educator of the community, but you are an educator of self. And we are going to get into that. And I don't want to talk anymore. I just want to go into our conversation. I want you to start from the beginning. Would you please tell the listeners a little bit about who you are and some of your humble beginnings?
Who am I? I am a person who was born to two wonderful parents. Unfortunately, my mother died when I was three, but I had an unbelievable father who did the absolutely impossible task of being a mother and a father.
Mm-hmm.
And in his mannish, sort of awkward way, he would take me to the movies, and Shirley Temple movies, if anyone there remembers Shirley Temple. She had an English, not Shirley Temple, that was before this, Hayley Mills had an English accent. She was a British actress, and he would take me to the movies, and he'd say, I want you to sound like this. This was a man's way of telling his little girl, like, that he wanted her to be proper. So I'm like, but I'm not British to myself. I didn't say it to him. But it must have planted a seed, because I developed an absolute love for British literature throughout my life.
Isn't that amazing? And you know, Mary Lou, the same thing happens to our young people today. Whatever we say to them, It is branded in their minds. And this
Thank
is why
you.
We should all focus on to make sure that what it, whatever we deposit in the lives of young people
Absolutely.
Is positive. Because I look at you, and you are so petite, you are so elegant, you know, you are so eloquent. And little did I know that it started way back then in the movie theater.
I didn't know that either.
I beg your pardon?
I didn't know that either. You just told me.
Oh, it's amazing how the impact we have. Yes, you didn't have a mother, and yes, there were things that a mother would have said to you, and she was not around to say those things. But he made sure he founded you, someone who would demonstrate the type of daughter he wanted to groom. Isn't that amazing?
Well, it is amazing. And if you think about it, it was through art. Cinema
yes.
is art.
Yes, yes, yes. So... You went to the movies with your dad, and he groomed you. He didn't give you away to any of his relatives to raise you. He knew that it was his responsibility. So, elementary school to high school and all of that. What was that like for you?
It was my
life.
You
were born and raised in New York, right?
I went to boarding school for 13 years in Dobbs Ferry, New York, which is in Westchester.
Yes.
And my father would pick me up on weekends. That would be Friday nights.
Mm-hmm.
And I would spend the weekend home with him.
Mm-hmm.
And then he would bring me back on Sunday nights.
The night, yep.
And
what was boarding school like for you? I mean, a lot of teenagers say, we don't want that restriction going to boarding school and all of that. What was that like for you, Mary Lou?
Well, I started at 5.
Oh, my heavens. Daddy wanted the best for his little princess.
Don't make me cry.
Well, if you
yeah.
gotta cry, you gotta cry.
No, he was a very handsome man, and there were women that always wanted to go out with him. But he would never take that risk because I was number one.
My God.
So
My
he
God.
Decided to be the mother and daddy.
So now I
and,
see where you got your good from.
Excuse me?
Now I see where you get your good looks from.
Oh, my mother.
Oh.
She would be considered much prettier than he was handsome.
Wow.
But he loved her dearly. He didn't get married until he was 35.
Oh, to your mommy?
To my mother, and she was 25.
Oh.
And he was.
She fell in love with an older man.
10 years, yes. And she was engaged to someone when she met my daddy. And I guess
What kind of boarding school did you go to? Was it a Christian?
Oh, it was called Sacred Heart Villa.
A Catholic school.
Excuse me? A
you
Catholic
a
boarding
Catholic
school.
Oh.
A Catholic
so you
boarding
got
school.
All around good molding. All
well, I learned to question. I learned to question things as a child.
Yes. So, let us go. Let us just delve into your passion, the thing that allows your adrenaline to pump. Reading. When did Mary Lou develop the love of reading?
I think it was definitely not in high school because what they had us read there was ridiculous to someone of teenage age. Hawthorne, I could read Hawthorne now and barely tolerate him, but as a teenager, it was like, just let me lick hot coals.
You are something. My heavens. But no, and you can tolerate him.
Oh, now no, of course. Now I understand. But you should never inflict these really intense pieces of literature on youngsters because it turns them off to the written word.
That's right. It's like elegant dining. You know, not everybody can cope with that. So if you know you're going to take somebody out for elegant dining, and you know they're not accustomed to that, you got to prep them before. Or else
son. If it's not a hamburger or a grilled cheese, he's totally traumatized.
Yes, and that's how most teenagers are, you know? So you went through your high school years and elementary school years, and you read because you had to. You read because you had to get the schoolwork done. But somewhere along the line, you said, man, this thing makes me feel good. This thing
Exactly. My first year of college.
Ah.
And believe it or not, it was a Hawthorne book.
Oh, no. Don't tell me that.
It was awesome. And I just was like, holy mackerel. I remember this book. This book tortured me. But now I love it. I love Hawthorne. And it was The Scarlet Letter, which is not an easy book, which has very intense evocations of American morality, the puritanistic morality of a woman who has had an affair with the minister of the town, and she is branded for life to wear a red scarlet letter on her dress, but he doesn't get any of the blame.
No, it's all.
And I don't think in high school you can understand that.
No. So, you went there the first year of college and you started off with Hawthorne. Who would have thought that Hawthorne's material would have turned your life around? As a matter of fact, it has captivated your life.
Yes.
You have become an avid reader. Explain to us, when you read and when you write essays, because you said to me, when I asked you what work you did, you said you write essays. And you know that a lot of people have businesses that they write papers and they sell papers. So I thought that was your business. So then I asked, so what grade you write for, college, high school, what? Why did you tell me when I asked you that question?
I think I said for myself.
Yeah. You said, I write for me. And I said, there's something different about this lady. I need to have her share her story. So tell me, Mary Lou, when you read and when you write the essays for Mary Lou, tell me, what's going on in your inside of you? How does this make you feel when you write a piece? Because you said to me, I've never published any of my work, and I said, not yet. Because I know that, I don't know when, but I know you will see it fitting to publish your work so that it can help to change the lives of other people. But how does it make you feel?
Well, you know, I'm a city person. I lived in Manhattan for 10 years. Mm-hmm. And I moved up to Connecticut, and I had the biggest gift of my life, my 15-year-old, quote-unquote, hunk of burning love son. And I found myself with a lot of free time.
My Lord, and my Lord.
I found myself not relating very well to, like, the mothers that cook cookies or go out for luncheons. And it was a very lonely, expansive area. We live in, I think the post office calls it the rural route. So I started.
The royal route?
The rural. How do you get rural? Rural.
Rural, okay. I know
rural.
What that
Am
means.
Am I saying that right?
That
rural. R-U-R-A-L,
but like
rural.
A male. You don't have to walk for it, so it's not that rural.
Yeah, well, that's what, I mean, it's, there's not, you know, if you've been to my house, you really
yeah.
don't
mm-hmm.
see anything
well,
other
see
than the
things.
Trees. They don't talk
that's
back. I tried.
Mm-hmm.
But
then, like,
yeah.
you weren't going to be baking cookies. You weren't going to go to luncheon. You weren't going to go to do all the other things that the ladies do.
Yeah.
You decide, I'm going to pick up my pen and pad, my laptop or something, and you began writing.
I realized that anyone who writes a book, let's say, I'm just going to take Henry James, and Henry James is maybe a name that strikes fear and terror in a lot of readers because
mm-hmm.
he's so difficult. But I did not mind reading a paragraph five times
mm-hmm.
in order to get it.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
then I realized that what a privilege this is. I mean, Henry James died in 1916, one of those two
his
years.
His work is still strong. Isn't that amazing?
Oh, he's considered the master. Henry James is considered the master. In fact, unfortunately, there are too many lazy minds and too many lazy readers to
mm-hmm.
put themselves through his work. But
mm-hmm.
I realized that I am having a conversation with a writing genius because of a book.
Mm.
He could still be alive.
Hmm.
He is alive. He is still alive
yes,
because he left.
And his work lives in many people.
Yes.
And it will continue to live.
Yes.
Isn't that amazing? And that's what art does. That is
that's
what
exactly
art does.
It.
Lives on in the owners, and it lives in several owners.
Art makes life bearable.
Yes. Yes. Yes, it does. Yes, it does. Yes, it does. I'm going to ask you a question.
Go ahead. I'm
you
following
thought,
your lead.
Why haven't you thought of becoming a literature teacher?
Oh, my gosh. I've been asked this question so many times.
You know, I'm talking to you and I'm listening to you and I'm thinking.
Yes.
I feel strongly that is part of your calling. Can you imagine students going under your instruction? Can you imagine the value you would be adding to this world? We are in a world now, Mary Lou, where not too many of our young people are readers.
Mm.
And I'm
that
sure you would affirm this that reading is the window to everything. It's the main door to everything. And yet so many people shy away from it.
Well, you know, the students, my son gets homework now, right? When
yes.
we were kids, we had to go to the library and look up in the Encyclopedia Britannica,
mm-hmm.
the Encyclopedia Americana, and then we had to go to the Reader's Guide.
Mm-hmm.
And then look it up on microfiche. You
That's
didn't
right.
just dial it up.
with those big tapes and stuff. Now they just do it search.
And the hyperlinking, and there has to be a lot more education regarding hyperlinking and
mm-hmm.
how what you hyperlink to
mm-hmm.
is credible.
Yes,
I've noticed
yes.
lately that you're not allowed to put Wikipedia
mm-hmm.
on one of your, you know, as a source, which
mm-hmm.
I think is fantastic.
Yeah, because I think students nowadays are lazy because there's so much on the internet that's already for us to utilize.
Yes.
So you don't really
yes.
go into the painstaking
yes.
research
yes.
per se.
Yes.
To find the things, and that's why I think a lot of young people are missing that. For those of us who are old school, we still are kind of programmed to go the difficult route.
Yes.
But the young people, and some of these kids, man, they don't even know their alphabet yet, and they know how to find anything on the computer.
How about the times table?
Yeah.
Didn't you know your times table? I mean, like, dot, 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 dot. Now you ask them what...
Oh, no, everybody has a calculator. You know? So, but let's go back to your writings, Mary Lou, because you read, and do you read mainly novels? What do you read?
Addicted to the novel, and I will tell
mm-hmm.
you why. The novel is a microcosm of life.
Mm.
If you're a journalist,
mm-hmm.
you can only write factuality. What is factual?
Mm-hmm.
If
mm-hmm.
you are a novelist, you can write what you know is factual,
mm-hmm.
but maybe you cannot reference it.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that reading a novel is a much more significant way of being in touch with reality
mm-hmm.
because you are not edited. And
mm-hmm.
in countries,
mm-hmm.
Chile, any of the countries that are third world countries, Romania, when
mm-hmm.
they have, the only way they have gotten out of their situations was because of novels
mm-hmm.
that were written and distributed out of the country. Not journalists, because they couldn't be published.
Mm-hmm.
So the novel is the truest form of reality, even though it sounds like an oxymoron.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Wow. Now, I know that you have some of your writings. As we go on in the show, would you be interested in sharing some of your writings?
Well, I have some of my writings that I have taken. I have a couple of books that I've, like diary books. I've written
mm-hmm.
Pieces from my favorite authors as I read books. As I read a book, I don't think of it as I'm going to sit down and space out. I read a
mm-hmm.
book with a pencil in hand
mm-hmm.
and a diary
mm-hmm.
in hand.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to analyze it and understand it deeply
mm-hmm.
as I'm reading it.
You should be doing book reviews. Do you do book reviews?
I have edited in the past.
Yes, 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 yes. You are just a powerful source of, a powerful resource. You are so gifted all across the board. So would you care to read some of your work?
Let me see. I mean, I'm not reading my own writing, but I have some sticky pads.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Here on pieces that when I'm reading a book, I just take my pencil out and I write in the journal. And
right.
I don't.
Yeah, journaling
I'm
has
read
done
this
a lot
one
for me.
Thing.
Yes, I just enjoy journaling. Without journaling, I don't know where I would be in my career. Because I just
really?
Write things. Pardon?
You keep a journal?
Oh, yeah, I write a journal. That's where all my goals comes from. Because a lot of times the Spirit gives me things and I'm not sure where it fits into my journey.
Hmm.
And I journal, and sometimes I go back and I look on journals that I wrote from a long time ago, and something is happening now that Spirit had gave me maybe 3-4 years ago. So what I find out for me, journal helps me to empty my spirit and clear my head. The more I journal, the more creative I become. And I don't have to sit and ponder about something because it's recorded in my journal. So it's like my journals are like my archive for all the things.
Archives
that
of
happen.
Your mind.
Huh?
Archives of your mind.
Exactly. And then I can go back and I say, oh, my heavens, look at this. I completely forgot about this. And I tell you something. When I started going back to traditional college a few years ago,
mm-hmm.
I began doing a whole lot of psychology courses. And my advisor asked me at the time, why am I doing so many psychology courses? And I said, I don't know, but that's what I need to do.
It's what you're wired to do that.
And then I went back and looked in my journal and found that the Lord had placed it on my spirit to do a personal development institute and to write textbooks and all of that. And if I want to write textbooks and have my textbooks being used in colleges and universities, having a psychology degree will be a good thing to do, especially if I'm going to write textbook on human development and all of that stuff. So I said,
mm-hmm.
look at that. It was there. If I did not have it in my journal, I would not know how long ago I had gotten the insight to do that. And this is why I tell my clients, I tell my friends, I tell everybody, journal, 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 journal. And I said, you don't have to buy anything expensive. Go in the dollar store, pick up a bunch of books, but the one thing I can
exactly.
tell you is to write. I love reading too, but I read the personal development stuff, you know. But I know reading is good. So,
but you know, when you say
you have
read
a piece, we have 58 minutes remaining in the segment, so. If you have a piece and you want to read it, you can read it.
Well,
and
I'm
going to
read you something that it's very, these are all very, like, short sentences. These are thoughts I had while reading that I put in
mm-hmm.
my journal.
Yes.
Some of us travel the world and take in the things it has. Take in the things it has to offer. While some of us stay put and let the world come to us. Those would be the ones that love reading. Think of that.
Yes, I'm listening.
That's something that really struck me,
mm-hmm.
that you don't
mm-hmm.
have to travel around the world.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, you can travel around the world and you could be totally bored
exactly.
by what you're seeing because they are tourist traps that you're supposed to like and you don't know why you don't like them and your
mm-hmm.
feet are sore. But when
mm-hmm.
you read a book about these the same monuments,
mm-hmm.
you're taking in these things on another level.
Yes, and it puts a greater impact on you. the reader. You know?
Absolutely. There's something else I read that Professor Robert Harrison from Stanford University, one of my favorites, wrote. He was telling, talking about the difference between the snail and the mollusk. Myself, I would never know the difference.
That's right, because it's not something that you're keen or passionate about.
You know, the snail and the mollusk. The snail sets forth in search of its food during the night. I didn't know that. The mollusk holds fast to its rock. And periodically lifting its shell, just periodically lifting its shell to absorb the nutrients that reach it from the currents of the sea. If you're going to be a mollusk, New York City is not a bad place to find a rock to colonize. All you have to do is lift your shell a little and let them in. I hope that's not too heavy.
And that's a powerful statement. That's food thought on a lot of different levels.
Yes, a lot of different levels.
You know, and I see you don't just read for the sake of reading. You're reading because you are educating yourself as you go along. And
I'm an archaeologist.
Yes. That's exactly who you are. That's exactly who you are. Continue. I don't want to deprive the listeners.
No, I'm looking at the different things I've... The Divine Comedy by Dante.
By whom?
Dante. D-A-N-T-E.
Okay.
The Divine Comedy by Dante. This is an anecdote that I heard again when I was listening to Dr. Robert Harrison from Stanford. Ian Watt, a writer, was in prison during World War II for a very long time. Luckily for him, the prisoners in his cell had tobacco, but even luckier, they were all very literate creatures, lovers of literature. They had tobacco, but they didn't have any paper. And they were dying for a ciggy. So what do you think they had to do?
Sit and discuss literature.
Excuse me?
Sit and discuss literature. Don't tell me they tore the pages of the book out to make the cigarette.
Then I'll just go on to another story.
What did they do?
They had to memorize each one of them. I think there were five. Can you imagine if you had to be in prison? Wouldn't you love to be in prison with a bunch of guys who loved literature?
Well, it's a good way of passing your time because they would take you through some of the best times. And for those who was not that well-learned when they got there, there's a thing or two they can learn during those times because they have a lot of free times on their hands.
And they only had this one very precious book, and each one of them memorized a canto. And if anyone doesn't know what that is, it's a major part of a very long poem. They memorized a canto apiece by heart, and then they would rip out the page and roll their tobacco.
I thought they did that. But that was a good way for them to memorize it. So they didn't, even though they smoked the words, they didn't lose them because they had them engraved in their minds.
Absolutely. In fact, Ian Watt, who is the one that is writing this, said Oh, wow. Did I read Dante? You know, I smoked him.
He smoked him, but
he smoked him
in his mind before he smoked
yes.
him.
Yes, and everyone had to memorize a canto before they smoked the page.
God. I wonder how long did the author say how long it took them to
I hope it was a very long time, because that would give them all the more pleasure.
Yeah,
but
know, maybe some of them to quit too from smoking because they had to wait so long.
But can you imagine loving literature so much and how horrible it must have been to smoke Dante?
I can't say that without laughing.
For
me to do that with one of my personal development books, because I tell you something, Mary Lou. When my office was at a different place in New Milford, I had my library like out. Everybody who came could have access to my books and everything. And I noticed some of my books went on marathons, you know, and they never came back. So
now at my office,
my bookshelf is right in front of my desk, where I can see everything, and nobody borrows anything from me, because I said, you know, you need to invest in yourself. Go down to the bookstore and get something for yourself, because those are not things you loan out, because that's personal investment.
You know what? I can't believe you're saying that.
Huh?
That's exactly how I feel. I cannot believe you're saying that. That's exactly how I feel.
Exactly, because people don't understand. They'll do a lot of other stuff with their money, but they will not buy a book. So I said, nobody borrow any book. Nope. I don't care. You can go and buy it for yourself. You can buy it online. They sell used books a lot of ways, but I stopped. I stopped loaning the books out. So, continue. You sure you don't want to read an essay for us?
No, I have. No, you see, this is what I'm reading to you are pieces from the people that have impacted me.
All right, continue. We have 40, maybe 40 minutes remaining.
Okay. Well, you just tell me. Salman Rushdie is one of my favorite writers, and I'm sure that most people know that. He got into big trouble writing the satanic verses.
Ooh.
He had a fatwa against his life, and he had to live in London under the Scotland Yard security for almost 9 years.
Wow.
And this was a piece of literature, but it was a novel.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not going to say too much on this subject because I don't want to have my life under a fatwa. But he's one of my favorite writers just because of his metaphorical brilliance.
Mm-hmm.
And I love when he talks about his mother. He said, my mother was like this Garcia Marquez of gossip. She had this fantastic labyrinthine structure in her mind about exactly who had done what to whom for several generations. It was a great resource for me. But there was one day when she said, you know what? I'm not going to tell you any more stories. All of the stuff you put in your books, you just get me into trouble. So that I share with you because writers can only give you what they are and what they have experienced.
Mm-hmm.
And they say, no, it's fiction. Yes, it is fiction, but whose mind is it coming from? Yes, they had to do years of research.
Mm-hmm.
And they have to reorganize the history to make it into a story.
Mm-hmm.
But ultimately, you always hear the writer's voice.
That's right. That's right. That's right. Because a good writer has to bring you to that place where you can see it, feel it, and taste it. Otherwise, you're not enjoying his work. His or her
and
work.
Journalists cannot say that. Journalists are not allowed to do what novelists are. And the novel is in very, very deep trouble. And it saddens my heart to even have to say this. But every other writer that I read about, the main topic is, but what about the novel? Is it going to last? And they hope so, but there's one writer that just published something. His name is David Shields.
Mm-hmm.
And I listened to the podcast. I listened to NPR a lot, and it was on the Leonard Lopate show. I have never heard myself jump, seen myself jump up and down and say expletives.
Ooh,
and,
Lord.
And
did not.
He was saying that the novel is dead.
Mm.
That we should only write about what's real.
Mm-mm.
And Leonard Lopate, who has hosted PEN, Poetry Essayists and Novelists. In fact, they're going on right now in New York. Their main goal is to free writers who are in prison throughout the world because of outspoken ways, basically journalists.
Ooh.
And Leonard Lopate was so polite. I think David Shields, and I'm going to say that word a couple of times, David Shields, because people should know that there are people like that out there that just do not want to accept that reality exists in a different way other than reality.
Mm-hmm.
He thinks that you can only write down what you hear, feel, see, and touch, and you're not going to be sued by. But the fiction writer does it much better because they know, since it's quote-unquote fiction, they can say anything. And
that's
they have freed societies.
And it stimulates the reader's creativity as well. And
oh, my gosh, I can't believe you brought that up. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
That was a beautiful, yes. As a matter of fact, Henry James said that you always write up to the writer, to the reader. You write up. He or she is not supposed to understand everything you are saying.
Mm-hmm.
Henry James wanted the reader to find within their psyche, within their soul, what he was writing meant to them.
That's right. And for each person, I listen to you, and what came immediately to my mind is like observing a piece of art. Each of us sees it differently and accepts
absolutely.
It differently, depending on what our needs are. What are we expecting to get out of that work? And that's brilliant.
And you know what? If you're not willing to read a sentence five times, then you shouldn't be reading that book.
That's right. That's right.
Because the writer is writing up to you. And if
you
can't put that...
I was saying sometimes I speak with people and they say, I read that book and gave it away. And I say, how many times you read it? Once. And I say, you just scan it through. You didn't get anything out of that book.
Exactly.
Because like sometimes you read a book five times and it's on the fifth time that you really get the true meaning of the book.
Absolutely. How could you be so vain as to expect to understand a genius's work the first time around?
That's right.
You really understand this, Daphne.
I do. I tell you, God did not connect us for no reason at all. And I got to let the listeners know, you had no idea what this conversation was going to be like.
No.
And you trust, I remember last night you asked me, what happened if the conversation is not good? I said to you, we have the option of deleting the show. But, you know, I trust my spirit that when my spirit tells me to do something, it is correct. And I can go out on the limb because my spirit never fails me yet. And, you know, I remember when I walked out of your kitchen today, you look at me and ask me, so there's no prepping for me to get? And I said, no. We're going to turn up. We're going to have a conversation, right?
Absolutely.
I am so pleased with this conversation. I don't know if you are, but this, I know there's
what's
somebody
else. What's not to be pleased about?
Huh?
What's not to be pleased about? I mean, you're not telling me to hang up.
You know, there is some young person out there who, or persons or people, who wants to get into writing as a career, and they need to be listening to somebody who has committed, devoted over 20 plus years to reading. Because I turn up at your house today at midday, and you were reading.
That's why I had to say, wait, so I can take a shower, because I was reading.
I'm going to tell them all the details. You know, Mary Lou, let's say
madame.
They decide that they're going to stop you from reading. What did that make you feel like?
What? That I wouldn't want to be around. That?
My God. My God.
If you stopped me from reading?
I don't. How many books do you read a month?
Well, it depends on the book. I mean, if I'm reading Henry James, that's a good month, and then maybe another month, a year down the road. If I'm reading Salman Rushdie, ooh, that's a real killer. but I understand about Pakistan, about Kashmir, about everything going on in northern India only because of the writings by Salman Rushdie. Not what I read in the newspaper.
Should be traveling
tell you
the
you
world like one lecturing about literature.
Excuse
and
me?
And what it has done for your life, lady.
Oh, my gosh. You know, I went to the New York Times. They have series, New York Times Lectures. They have the beautiful new New York Times building on 43rd Street in Midtown Manhattan. And I'm walking down the street, and there's a snowstorm. And I call my husband and my son. I said, I'm getting closer. I'm going to hear Salman Rushdie. I'm getting there. I got to go. There's security. And I hung up the phone. This was like one of the most exciting days of my life. And I said to myself, oh, my son probably thinks I'm such a geek.
Oh, that is so funny. So, does your family love and enjoy reading like you do?
No.
So that just sets you apart from them. You're in a class all by yourself, lady.
Well, I think that they're guys. Even if they were impressed by what I'm doing, they would keep it to themselves. And although I do not need them or anyone to be impressed by it, I'm just saying that I can tell sometimes when I say something that the two of them are like, how did you know that?
Because I read.
Thank you.
So, Mary Lou, at this time, we have 37 minutes remaining in this segment. I'm going to ask you to take this time, or some of this time, and give us your top 10 reasons for reading.
Oh, my gosh. This is really being on the spot. Top 10 reasons for reading. Well, when you open a book and you read a line and you feel within yourself that they're writing this about me. Then you understand that your feelings are universal feelings. Number two, she really did put me on the spot, guys. number two. No, but I mean, this is, I don't want to go hum and ha and ha and ha. I want to free associate very quickly because it's.
No, you can take your time and pick out 10 because I know you could do 100, but I'm just letting you do 10.
Henry James, A Portrait of a Lady. A comparison of the New World, America, with the old world, Europe, and how a very well-bred New World girl goes to Europe and marries into European aristocracy.
Mm-hmm.
But what was happening at that time was that the American girls were going over to Europe to get a title, and the European men wanted the money.
Mm-hmm.
So the way that Isabel Archer, who is the protagonist in this novel, A Portrait of a Lady, handles herself is very, it's poignant. In that she has to be true to herself, and in that she has to do the right thing that she, what she believes is right, but yet you know as the reader that she's really messing her life up. And Henry James is like, and he's been criticized. Some people don't like James for the simple reason that he didn't close this book up cleanly. He left it open. Are you with me?
Yeah, I'm listening. So one of the reasons you read is because of the open-endedness of some of these materials?
Oh,
is that what I'm hearing?
Sometimes. But this is what I think the novelists that do that are the most brilliant because they are really thinking of you, the reader. They're giving to you. They want you to exercise your mind the way they have writers have exercised their minds to get to that to get to that point in life. You know, you could finish reading a Henry James novel as I have done. One is called The Wings of the Dove. I have literally shut the book. And this is after reading, like, how many paragraphs, 5 times a piece, and saying, what did I just read? Are they together or are they not together? And I would go back. And then after reading about James down the road a piece, I figured that he didn't want to give you an answer.
So what,
he wanted
one
you
of
to
the
figure.
Other things you like is the mystery about it, or
The ambiguity. The ambiguity of it. It's like there are no simple answers in life, and I think that's what James is trying to say.
That is powerful, especially we are now in an era where majority of the world is looking for microwave results. And what I'm just hearing you say, there are no easy way, there are no easy answers. It's
and there may not be any answers.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But you are really intuiting into what I'm saying beautifully. You're really understanding. I mean, yeah. He's basically getting, and this was considered very, very, very new wave. Authors didn't do this previously. You know, people wanted to know, like, the plot, the summary, the characters, and they wanted to have it open and shut and closed and wrapped up like a nice little package. And James was one of the first writers to say, this is the dumbing down of of reading.
Wonderful.
Sometimes
wonderful.
There's no closure.
Okay.
And you said it beautifully.
All right, so what are some of the other reasons?
Oh my God, I've read so many books, I wish... Orhan Pamuk, a Turkish writer who won the Nobel Peace Prize in, I think it was 2006. Wrote about the transformation in Turkey and how... they were so, who is this man now? Oh my God, I have to remember all these things in my mind. Atatürk, wanted to westernize Turkey. So what that meant was basically abolishing, many of the literature, the language, that Turks grew up with, that forms part of the part of their identity. And like Salman Rushdie, he's under total police protection. Because people do not, when you have a government that has changed their ways for their reasons, with no consideration for the individuals that they have left behind culturally, they want to silence anyone that doesn't agree with them. So this is a perfect example of what I mean when I say novelists expose ineptitude of the government, the governing party, and the atrocities of the governing parties.
Right. So, are there any other reasons that you could pick out?
Because I
listen to you say that if reading is ever taken away from you, you wouldn't want to be around. You know,
I think if you asked anyone that really loved to read, Zadie Smith, I was talking to you about today, she just had a baby and she's nursing her baby, and her husband said to her, and she's reading a book as she's nursing her baby, and he said, you know, you have to talk to the kid once in a while. You know, all this kid is ever going to remember is how you turn the pages.
It's so funny. Because you know what? I just jotted on my piece of paper to ask you, when you had your baby, did that cut down on your reading time? And here you are telling me about somebody that has a baby. So that was going to be my next question for you.
Now, that was the beginning of my reading time. I worked. Yeah, but no, the 3-hour naps started it. 3-hour naps. It was, I had a date with Henry.
I hope you wasn't giving that child Benadryl to go sleep so you could read.
No. I mean, you know, I'm not beyond doing something, not above doing something like that.
Poor Pat,
right?
Yeah.
I'm just, Ernest Hemingway, I've always been curious about him, so I started reading him because I wanted to understand why he's so loved. And he has a very short sentence. He puts things to the point very cleanly and clearly, but he's full of testosterone. I think if you're not a guy, it's hard to get Hemingway. It's hard to be sympathetic with him. And so that's a good example of, even though a writer is brilliant, I cannot understand the brilliance because I cannot understand the attitude of the macho.
I think you have, or let me just brief you on some of the things I thought I heard you say are part of the 10 reasons. And I probably have an overlap here, but you oftentimes see yourself in the stories. You find out that your life is universal as you read. You are able to observe the brilliance that there is. You see the ambiguity of life. And sometimes
The author forces you to see the ambiguity.
Yes. And there, sometimes it proves to you that there are no closures. And for other times, you read because of the curiosity. So we still have four to go.
Okay.
Miss any?
I'm looking on my bookshelf. I have so much here. God, how could I forget this?
Huh?
Excuse me?
Is it,
that's not
you read because it allows you to collect other great writers' work or some great writers' work?
I don't know. I when I read a book, it either it talks to me or it doesn't. And I feel sad in even saying that because they may have something very powerful to say to another person, but you could only bring to a book or a movie or a work of art who you are.
That's right.
You can't please all of the people all of the time.
Right, and sometimes other people will see themselves in you as well in your work, you know?
Well, that's part of the human condition. F. Scott Fitzgerald, beautiful, beautiful, wonderful writer. I think anyone who is serious in writing should read The Great Gatsby once every year or every 2 years. It is considered a work of art, of literature, where almost every single sentence, paragraph is like a piece of poetry, and everyone knows that poetry is the highest form of the written word.
Amazing.
And, excuse me?
No, I said amazing.
No, and Tender is the Night by F. Scott Fitzgerald. His years at Princeton, and how I think this happens to a lot of college kids, how you have to get used to the different social milieu. And he says it in such a beautiful way. He doesn't go along with what the others think are cool. He does his own thing. And it's a sad book because he's estranged from his mother. he has failed love relationships, but it's a young person's life that's trying to climb up in the world and all of the travails that he comes up against.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, people think that I'd love to go to an Ivy League school.
Mm-hmm.
That's not the answer to your life. In fact, in many, many, many instances, that could
mm-hmm.
be the worst thing for some kids.
Yep, yep. That's why you notice I can remember in past years, and when you look on the data of suicides in colleges, a lot of them was happening at Ivy League schools.
Oh.
And not to say that in a negative way about Ivy League schools,
but a lot of the
students there, they put so much pressure on themselves.
Yeah.
And when they figure that they are not meeting up, not to the expectation of their parents or their professors, but of themselves, they oftentimes end their lives, and it is sad.
Suicide is at an epidemic rate.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
I have a 15-year-old going on 16, and I am very wary to force the issue, because I understand that he can go away to a college, and I'm not going to be there. Daddy's
That's
not
right.
going to be there. And
That's
he can
right.
be so overwhelmed.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Not everyone does this, but I mean, listen, you read the news and you keep it in the back of your mind. It just, you know, you want to stay current.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I have a friend, my best friend I was telling you about, Rena.
Mm-hmm.
Her friend's child went to Vanderbilt.
Ooh.
And killed himself.
Oh, my God.
He just couldn't handle it.
Wow. This is why, you know, I always encourage parents to have the conversation with their children and enforcing them that all you expect from them is their best.
Mm-hmm.
And never to think that it should reach the stage where they think of killing themselves instead
of
coming.
Oh, my God.
It's always
and the thing is that you don't know.
Mm.
You don't know. It's like, what do you think? Do you think that do you think you could be the most tuned-in parent and it could still happen?
Oh, yes. Yeah, it can still happen.
You do?
It can still happen. But what I believe is that if the child hears it long enough, every time the thought of taking his or her life comes, he's going to hear that voice in the back of his mind, his or her mind saying, talk to me, talk to me, talk to me. Talk to me, talk to me, talk to me, you know. And you can always do something else. You know, it's not the end of the world if you fail a paper. It's not the end of the world. You need to follow your heart and see what you want. And do something else. You know, but it always devastates me when I hear of a young person taking his or her life. Any person taking their own life is sad. And that's why we have to encourage our young people to talk, to talk, to talk, to talk, to talk, to talk.
There's nothing I always say. It's what you don't say that's going to hurt you.
Exactly. Exactly. Not what you say, what you did not say. That's
but
right.
you don't say.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And sometimes it's a little intimidating to kids if they have parents who are sort of smart. Intellectual?
Yes. And a lot of parents, too, who have unfinished business, like they wanted to become something that they did not become. And come hell or high water, they want their child to become that something when the child have no likeness in the world for it.
Yes.
And they, if it kills me, you're going to go to Harvard. If it kills me, if I don't, going to go to Harvard, and the kid is thinking, I want to become an electrician. Let me be.
That's selfishness.
Yep.
There are a lot of selfish people
in this world. A lot of selfish people in this world.
They don't know they're being
selfish. 17 minutes remaining.
Okay.
You would give recommendations.
I have another author.
Whatever you want to call it, to a person who is listening now and who have no taste for reading. How do they start? It's never too late to start.
Read, don't read junk. Think of it this way. Whatever you put into your mind, you get out. If you don't know what to read, pick up the classics. If you don't know which classic, go online. They tell you absolutely what they are about. They give you free cliff notes to help you along with the book. But you know I'm going to give you a very crude example. You eat a vegetable for a certain reason. You want to have a clear system. What goes in comes out.
That's right.
Writers across the board say, read. What you put in, you get out. And be very selective in what you read. Dostoevsky is one across the board that writers love for his sentences. They love writers for different things. Turgenev, Tolstoy, as we discussed this afternoon. A lot of the Russians, which unfortunately were not able to write that much because they were killed. But in the little time that they had, boy.
Did they make an impact on the world? Isn't that something? This is why they say, when you come into this world, we each come with a purpose and a calling. And we don't need to procrastinate. We need to take action. Because we are only here for a season. And none of us know when that date is going to come.
That's a beautiful way of putting it, Daphne. We only come here for a season. That's very literary.
That's right. We don't know when the season ends. You know, I met you yesterday over the phone. I met you today in person. And I treasure that because you and I don't know when our exit is going to come. You know, what if we had put off, let's talk next year at the same time. We don't know where we're going to be. And each of us need to look on the time we occupy here on this earth. Don't sit back.
This is it.
Huh?
This is it. This is it.
That's right. That's right. This is it.
But you know what I...
what we have. And believe me, there will be someone who will pick up where you left off. Because our legacies in this world does not mean that we need to complete it. We just need to start. Somebody is going to pick it up and follow after you. I tell people, whatever I'm doing, Mary Lou, I'm not doing it for me. It's not about me. Everybody knows that my purpose and calling is to change our world by transforming one life at a time. I only want to do one. Every day if I get up and I touch one, that's 365. And if those one touch one and touch one and touch one, before you know it, it's going to snowball.
Can I ask you a question?
Sure.
What made you feel this way in life?
I grew up in the West Indies, very poor. We didn't have electricity. We didn't have bathrooms and all of that like you know it. But the one thing my mother always tell me Mary Lou, sweetie, yes. You can be anything that you can be. Anything. And my mother was an asthmatic. And every time she had an asthmatic attack, I would have to stay home from school to be with her. Because my father went in the fields, to work the fields.
Oh.
And she always said to me, Mary Lou, you are going to be a good nurse one of these days. You're going to be a good nurse. And even though my mother died when I was 13, all my years
growing up,
I could hear it in the back of my head like we are speaking now. You're going to be a nurse. You're going to be a nurse. And I went to nursing school, and even while I was in nursing school, and when I graduated and began working as a nurse, I did it differently. I would always be getting into conversations with my parents, my patients.
Patients,
I would
yep.
give them the medicine, but I would not just say, Mary Lou, take your pill. I would have to ask you what you eat. I have to ask if you get visitors. I got to ask you everything.
You had heart.
So I grew up, and as I traveled my life journey, I always assessed each person differently. I don't just pull everybody together and just assess them. I spend time to get to know everybody. And I see each person adding value to the next person. So I meet you and I want to look, how can I add value to this person's life? You know, how can I appreciate the value that this person brings in me? So I tell people often, Mary Lou, I didn't even know I was black until I came to America. Because in Jamaica, I was a person. Although we all look differently in Jamaica because we have the Chinese, we have the Jewish man and everybody, but I grew up learning to appreciate people, to love and to respect them. So when I enter into a relationship, I enter in there to give off my best, to give myself and to leave that relationship better than I enter it, and to leave adding some value to that. And each day I pray to God, I say, when I go out today, give me one more person to make a difference in their life.
You know,
so I hope that answers your question.
You know what? I forgot what my question was because you far surpassed it, and I appreciate it. I appreciate everything that came after.
Okay, we have 9 minutes. I wanted to just give a closing statement. Then I'm going to just do a tiny bit of housekeeping, and then I want to play our closing music. So just give a closing thought, please.
Me.
Yes.
A closing thought.
Statement, thought,
Don't ever in life, the effort you put into anything is what you get out of it.
Yeah.
It's not always going to be feel good. It's not always going to be pleasing immediately.
Mm-hmm.
But if you do it consistently, be it exercising, which I don't do, be it reading, be it any sort of art, be it anything that you do consistently, I think consistency is what makes a person life more livable. You have to be able to say, I don't get it this time. But that doesn't mean that I'll never get it.
That's right.
That means,
That's right.
I mean, who are you to think?
That's
and
right.
I say this, I'll say this again and again. Who are you to think that you can read James Joyce or Henry James or Salman Rushdie or F. Scott Fitzgerald or Guy de Maupassant once. They're geniuses.
That's right.
It took them 10 years sometimes to write their books. 10, maybe 30 days to write a sentence.
Mm-hmm.
So get off your high horse and work.
That's right.
When you do, oh, man, will it feel great.
Wonderful. Well, Mary Lou, I know this is not going to be your first and only time here on the A New Day show. I want you to know how much value you have added, not only to me, but also to my listeners. I thank you for trusting me enough for entering into this conversation with me. I hope you have one fourth of the enjoyment that I've had with you. I have acquired a lot of knowledge, and I am just so privileged to enter into your literary world. I thank you for your friendship, and I know that this will grow. And I just thank you for investing again into my listeners. I thank you for coming on the show. And you can hang around until I do the closing and until I do the music and all of that. You know, it's never too late for somebody to call in. So we have 6 more minutes remaining. So I just want to remind the listeners that the date for the Vision Weekend Conference 2010 has been pushed back to September the 3rd and 4th, and that will be taking place at the Heritage Hotel and Spa up in Southbury here in Connecticut. You can visit the website at www.visionweekendconference.com. The telephone numbers you can call are 860-355-9838, 718-753-0244, or 203-885-9434. You always hear me tell you that you do not have to settle for mediocrity, because you have been created for great and wonderful things. You heard the story of Mary Lou Lianza Sullivan tonight. She lost her mother at the tender age of 3. She could have been saying, oh, I can't read, I don't know how to read. Instead of, she spent her life reading some of the best literature that this world has ever seen. Well, I know there's not another Mary Lou out there, but you can do your part in contributing to the literary world. It is never too late. Yes, again, this is the Queen of the Empowered Soul saying so long. I love each of you, my listeners, and I appreciate you joining me this evening. I want you to remember, do not allow anyone to derail you. You have a destiny in which to complete, and I want you to follow your destiny. Have a blessed weekend, and I'll see you on Wednesday. So long. No, you can't talk now.
Oh, Daphne, that was beautiful. I wish I could have called.
Don't talk, Mary Ann. The show is still on.
Will you let me know what's the plight that you've called me to? The thing I'm set aside to do. I trust you, Lord, to see me through. Will you let me look in your heart? Lord, heal my need. Reveal to me
grab it in your spirit and say this. Thank you for showing me and directing me. Hallelujah. To my destiny. I dare you to declare it. Tell the Lord thank you for showing me. Hallelujah. And directing me. Speak to it. My destiny. Come on, you declare it to the Lord. Thank you, Jesus. I speak purpose tonight. Hallelujah. You will open that business and direct it. Hallelujah. To my destiny. I know what I'm here for. Tell the Lord, thank you. Hallelujah. For every trial that came with this lady. Hallelujah. For every struggle that came with this lady. I'm mighty grateful. I said I'm mighty grateful. See the breaking of day. It's destiny. And I know what I know. You may not be able to touch it right now. Begin to thank him. Begin to praise him. Begin to thank him. Begin to praise him. Begin to thank him. Begin to praise him. Hallelujah.